The polyomaviruses are a family of non-enveloped, icosahedral, double-stranded, circular DNA viruses and have been associated with the dreaded Merkel cell carcinoma. In this dialogue, Dr. Richard C. Wang and Dr. Stuart Brown tell us so much more about these viruses and why dermatologists and their patients should be concerned about them.
Hello there. This is Stuart Brown. Today, I'm having a conversation with Dr. Richard C. Wang. Dr. Wang is Assistant Professor of Dermatology at the University of Texas Southwestern Med Center. And we're going to discuss polyomaviruses, something that has become bigger and greater and more recognized in so many of our dermatologic disorders. This is relatively new, the polyomaviruses. When were they first discovered?
The first one was discovered quite a long time ago, actually, in 1962. And the way it was discovered is a really interesting story. Around that time, there was a lot of use of polio vaccines. It was being distributed very widely as part of a campaign. And it was found that in some of the vaccines that were being distributed, there was a tumor-inducing agent, and there was a search for that. And a scientist by the name of Dr. Bernice Eddy found that the tumor-causing agent, at least tumor-causing in rodents, was ultimately identified as the first polyomavirus called SV40.
Giving further support to the concept that cancers are, if not caused by, augmented by virus infections, for example. Right now, we recognize that Merkel cell is probably stimulated by that, if not produced, and therefore this has expanded into another road down the cancer road.
That is correct. There was actually initially a lot of concern related to SV40 about its potential to cause cancers in humans. The epidemiological evidence to date has not suggested at least that specific polyomavirus causes cancers in humans, but it is important because it was essentially the index polyomavirus, the first one discovered, and the one still to date that the most research has been done on.
The one discovered in 62.
The one discovered in 62.
Well, this was discovered back in 62, and here we are a significant number of years later. Why has there been such a resurgence of interest in polyomaviruses?
More recently, there's been a lot of improvements in sequencing technologies, and so partly related to that and partly related to the discovery of a lot of these polyomaviruses. Since about 2007, there have been more than 20 completely novel polyomaviruses that infect vertebrates. And what's remarkable is that 10 of these viruses have actually been found on humans and in human tissues and in human secretions. It's not clear that all of these cause disease, but the number of polyomaviruses is really astounding. And because of that, it's just sort of positive feedback, and there's even more interest in looking at these possible infectious agents.
You've stated that vertebrates are particularly affected. What human diseases have been associated with human polyomaviruses?
So far, I think there's good evidence that 4 polyomaviruses are associated and possibly causative of diseases in humans. There's different ways that these have been named, and one apparently is by the initials of the first person who's discovered to have disease. Sometimes it's named by the place where it was discovered, as is like the Wu and Qi viruses are named after the places where they were discovered. But I believe certainly JC virus and the BK virus are probably named after the patients in which they were found. And so both of those, the JC and the BK, cause diseases in humans. JC is associated with progressive multifocal leukoencephalopathy, which was first discovered in immunosuppressed patients and was found more commonly in HIV/AIDS patients. BK polyomavirus is associated with renal transplant nephropathy and hemorrhagic cystitis, pretty unpleasant, and also usually found in immunosuppressed renal transplant patients. And more recently, and of more interest to dermatologists, are the 2 polyomaviruses that cause skin-related diseases. Merkel cell polyomavirus, which is named after the eponymous skin cancer, which was discovered by Yuang Cheng and Pat Moore. And there's a strong evidence that at least it's associated and at least accelerates probably tumorigenesis. And then and her colleagues discovered trichodysplasia spinulosa polyomavirus, and it's strongly associated with trichodysplasia spinulosa, a rare but probably under-recognized skin disorder.
Merkel cell is a neuroendocrine tumor, isn't it?
That is correct.
And has the polyoma viruses affected other neuroendocrine areas?
People have looked not only in other neuroendocrine tumors, but also other tumor types. And so far, there isn't strong evidence for its association with any other type of cancer. And I think they've looked more carefully in gastrointestinal neuroendocrine cancers and pulmonary, and the evidence suggests that it's not directly involved.
Well, immune senescence, which is what happens as we all get older, plays a part in development of cancer, whether that's the fact that we don't handle viruses well. But there's also other changes of immune senescence. Aging, the people with Merkel cell are usually over 50 or 60. They have actinic degeneration of their skin. It's usually very, very modified by actinic exposure. It's usually more in sun-exposed areas. So these must be cofactors along with that polyomavirus.
That's a great point that you make. I think all of the polyomaviruses that are known to cause human diseases are in one way or another associated with immunosuppression, and Merkel cell polyomavirus is no different. All the factors that you listed, UV exposure, advanced age, one that you didn't mention is HIV/AIDS, those are all risk factors for developing Merkel cell carcinoma, and truth be told, all of the polyomavirus-associated skin diseases and other polyomavirus-related diseases.
You just mentioned trichodysplasia spinulosa. For we who are getting not just immune suppression or senescence, but just senescence per se, what is trichodysplasia spinulosa?
It's certainly difficult to say. It was first coined in 1999 by Claire Haycox, Susan Kim, and Phil Fleckman. They essentially found a patient with a very peculiar disease that affected hair follicles, and it essentially is an eruption of folliculocentric and usually erythematous papules, and very curiously, a lot of these papules have a hair shaft-like spicule that sticks out of it. So it has kind of a unique presentation. Although it was first sort of coined in 1995 as this disorder, it was probably recognized and called different things before 1999. And so it can present a little bit differently. If it's very severe, you can also have significant alopecia, not only of the eyebrows, but even of some terminal hairs in the body hair. And then in other cases, there's significant thickening of the skin and can even present as like a leonine facies.
There are several things that present as leonine facies. We used to think of lymphoma, used to think of Hansen's disease. We can add this to it now.
That's right, although this is rare.
Well, rare is what makes us experts. How do we diagnose TDS, trichodysplasia spinulosa?
What's critical in diagnosis is a punch biopsy of an affected follicle. You want to get down to the base of the follicle. There are some characteristic features in this disease.
So you want to go below the sebaceous gland.
That's right. You need to be certain that essentially there is an absence of a normal dermal papilla. And you need to take a look at the inner root sheath. In this disease, you'll see an abnormal proliferation of inner root sheath cells, and they'll have abnormal trichohyaline granules, and then they'll make this hair shaft-like material that's not a true hair. And another way that's emerging...
There are other adnexal tumors that produce like abnormal hairs. They're feathery ones like trichofolliculoma. And so these are modifications, probably viral driven, that can give you a variety of abnormal appearing structures that we think of as a hair.
I don't know how many of these adnexal neoplasms have been looked at. I believe that pilomatrichomas have been investigated and found not to be directly caused by trichodysplasia spinulosa, but I think it's an interesting question you ask to see whether or not this polyoma or other polyomaviruses might be involved in some of these adnexal neoplasms.
What is the evidence, though, that this virus causes TDS?
So the evidence is still indirect, but it's fairly strong. First of all, when the virus was first found by the Netherlands group, it was cloned directly out of one of these dystrophic spicules that they plucked from a patient and essentially amplified through PCR. In the same patient, they found that after he was treated, the viral load decreased considerably. There have been now other evidence, all the cases of trichodysplasia spinulosa in which PCR has been done to look for the virus, it's been found and found in pretty high copy number. And it is much less frequently found in normal skin or in the skin of immunosuppressed patients, and it's found at much lower levels. And perhaps most convincingly recently, they've looked in the actual specific lesions of trichodysplasia spinulosa with antibodies against the capsid of this virus and found it to be present in abundant fashion. So all of those things put together strongly suggest that this virus causes the disease, and if it doesn't directly cause it, is at least strongly associated with the pathogenesis of TS or trichodysplasia spinulosa.
What is the most serious complication of TDS?
Right now, I would still classify it as more of a cosmetic disease. Some of those patients really do have some significant disfiguring facial lesions from it and alopecia from it. I can't say that trichodysplasia spinulosa might not cause other significant problems, health problems in immunosuppressed patients, but certainly there are some treatments available, and in this disfiguring disease like this, it should be done, I think.
And what treatments might these be?
This is such a rare disorder that these are obviously off-label, but the ones that have been reported are topical cidofovir in many case reports. People take the medication and compound it 1 to 3% and just apply it to the affected areas.
You talk about compounding it. I don't know if you have any idea. For years, topical cidofovir has been compounded 1 to 3% for warts, recalcitrant warts, and certainly warts in immunocompromised people. And it costs about $900 or so for a 12-gram tube.
I've heard about the cost associated with this medicine. It is considerable.
And sometimes you will find an insurance company that will pay for it, but usually not because it's compounded.
There are potentially other treatments that have been reported. Oral valganciclovir has been reported to be successful in not necessarily resolving it completely, but at least decreasing the severity of the eruption. And what works very well, if at all feasible, is a reduction of the immunosuppression that these patients might be experiencing. A lot of the times, especially if these are transplant patients, that's simply not feasible or it's very difficult to do. But if it's done appropriately, you can see the body's own immune system developing an appropriate response to the virus and then sort of clearing it. So those are the treatments that have looked like they've been successful.
How common are polyomavirus infections?
The infections are actually quite common in humans. The current model for how these infections happen is that, and this was developed with the JC and the BK viruses, is that people are infected at a very young age, and then somehow the virus maintains itself in either a low-level persistent infection,
held in balance by the immune system.
Exactly. Or somehow establishes some sort of latency that we don't understand yet, like the papillomaviruses. But essentially, it's thought that infection happens early in a very high proportion of individuals. And so far what's been looked at is for JC virus, it ranges between 50 and 80% of adults have circulating antibodies against JC, suggesting that they've at least been exposed and possibly have low-level persistent infections of the virus. And then with BK, the one that causes a renal transplant nephropathy, it's very high. 80 and 90% is a current conservative estimate. For Merkel, again, some of these are still early, and depending on the population that you sample, it could change a little bit. But estimates are that more than half, or around 60% of people, have been exposed to the virus. And then for trichodysplasia spinulosa, again, more than half of individuals, maybe around 70%, have had previous exposure to the virus. So very, very common infections.
Rich, it's been an absolute delight. I find this informative. Certainly, it'll be helpful in our listeners and subscribers, and certainly even to our residents who get this dialogue will be of help in their understanding of such problems. Thank you very, very much for your information.
Well, thanks for having me here, Stu. I enjoyed it as well.
Thank you.
Polyomaviruses initially came of interest in 1960 when the first primate polyomavirus, SV40, was found to have oncogenic potential in monkeys, raising concern that these viruses may have similar effects in humans. The first human polyomaviruses, BK virus and JC virus, were isolated in 1971. We now recognize at least 10 polyomaviruses that infect humans. Four of these have been associated with disease. JC virus associated with progressive multifocal leukoencephalopathy, BK virus associated with renal transplant nephropathy and hemorrhagic cystitis, and of interest to dermatologists, Merkel cell polyomavirus and trichodysplasia spinulosa associated polyomavirus, associated with their eponymous conditions respectively. Merkel cell carcinoma, or MCC, is a rare, aggressive neuroendocrine skin tumor which typically presents as a painless, rapidly growing erythematous or violaceous nodule on the head or neck. Evidence suggests its pathogenesis involves infection with Merkel cell polyomavirus, first described by Feng et al. In 2008. This causal link is supported by the detection of Merkel cell polyomavirus viral DNA in 80% of Merkel cell carcinoma tumors, and the identification of Merkel cell polyomavirus DNA integrated into the tumor cell genome in a clonal manner. Research has also characterized deletions and mutations in the Merkel cell polyomavirus DNA sequence encoding large tumor antigens that occur systemically when Merkel cell polyomavirus is incorporated into the Merkel cell carcinoma tumor cell genome. These changes are required for Merkel cell carcinoma cell survival, supporting the notion that the virus may cause or accelerate tumorigenesis. Thus far, Merkel cell polyomavirus is the only polyomavirus that has been associated with cancer in humans. Trichodysplasia spinulosa, or TS, is a newly recognized condition, first formally introduced in 1999. It is characterized by the presence of erythematous folliculocentric papules with hair-like hyperkeratotic spicules, typically involving the face, ears, and nose. It frequently causes a non-scarring alopecia of the eyebrows, and in severe cases can create leonine facies similar to those seen in Hansen's disease. Histopathologically, biopsy reveals dilated hair follicles with an abnormal proliferation of inner root sheath cells, enlarged trichohyalin granules, and absent normal dermal hair papilla. There have been at least 20 cases described in the literature, exclusively in patients who were immunocompromised due to either solid organ transplant or hematologic malignancy. Thus, TS is rare, though likely underrecognized given the increasing number of patients on immunosuppressive therapies. Clinically, reduction of immunosuppression has been the most effective treatment for TS. Though antiviral therapies such as topical cidovivir 1-3% cream and valganciclovir have been tried with some success. Common among all diseases associated with human polyomaviruses is their predilection for immunocompromised hosts. In the case of Merkel cell carcinoma, there is also an association with advanced age and UV exposure, supporting that immunosenescence and other mechanisms of immune alteration may be important in polyomavirus-associated disease pathogenesis. In the general population, however, human polyomavirus infections are quite common, but rarely problematic. Studies estimate seroprevalence of antiviral protein antibodies in healthy adults at 80 to 100% for BK virus, 40 to 80% for JC virus, 60 to 80% for Merkel cell polyomavirus, and 70% for trichodysplasia spinulosa polyomavirus. High seroprevalence rates have also been detected in children, suggesting that humans are likely infected at a young age. It is possible that humans may maintain a persistent, low-level infection held in check by the intact immune system, or perhaps that polyomaviruses have a latency period similar to that of human papillomaviruses. Further studies are needed to better characterize this relationship.